she and I have wanted to share the podium with my sponsor forever. Polly has known that. And I have bugged Polly badly. And Marty made a name for herself without my help. Maybe a little. And we got to do a big book workshop in Canada together, and that was just fantastic. Yeah, thank you. We have saved the Canadians. And I'm sure there's some other people who have probably saved them too, but I know Marty and I did in Ottawa. And oh my God, and so I am so excited that we're going to be able to share the podium, Marty. I love you. And we can have a moment of silence for my sponsor. Okay, there you go. I'm not the easiest person to sponsor, however, I will tell you, I do not argue. I do not argue with my sponsor, and I do not ever disrespect my sponsor. I do not ever talk poorly about my sponsor. And I was taught that from day one. And I can't get over what I see sometimes people do with their sponsor. It's terrible. Stop it. Hey, nobody hired me, so we're not firing you. You know, you're not firing me either, okay? Just saying. I mean, if we can't work together, I'm no longer effective. I'll be calling the shots there. But the truth of the matter is this is, I'm a garden variety drunk. I'm not a counselor. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a social worker. When you start bringing me stuff I can't handle, I'm going to tell you, this is way outside of my scope. You know? So, there. My home group is the Primary Purpose Group in Austin, Texas. We meet on, let's hear it for PPG as well, received over there. We study the big book week after week on Tuesday nights at 7:30 at Faith United Methodist Church, 2101 South Lamar. If you're ever in Austin, Texas, we'd love to show you the same hospitality you've shown us. Yeah, it is. And I got to tell you something. We study the big book line by line, week after week, and we have over 250 people studying the big book in Austin. Doesn't that just blow you away? I know. I hope you love your home group as much as I love my home group. You know, I consider myself having, we've been doing this meeting now for 11 years. We've gone through the big book 5 times. And we go from doctor's opinion to the doctor's nightmare, right? First 164 pages in the doctor's opinion. And I can tell you, I like to consider myself today, I call myself a big book technician. Because that I like that. I've never cared for thumping and all that. It just had such a negative connotation. But let me tell you, I know the big book very, very well. And I live it. So a lot of people are like, oh, you know, so-and-so's all about the book and quoting the book. Well, you can tell pretty short order if they're living it. If they're not living it, okay, so what? Well, welcome to AA. Doesn't make you too unique in this room. God Almighty. I always like to say, man, there's no fighting in the lifeboat in AA, okay? If you like the big book, great. If you don't, great. Just don't fight. You with me on that one? There's no fighting in the lifeboat. So if you don't dig it, be quiet. And if you do dig it, be quiet. Right? I mean, that's just kind of the way it should be. We can all learn from each other. It's so important. I have 3 grandkids. I do like to start off by talking about my grandbabies. I have my oldest daughter's 38. My youngest son is 28. And my daughter has 2 of my grandkids, and my son has 1. And so I have now a 10-year-old, 2 5-year-olds that are cousins. And then Charlie just had his first grandbaby, and she's 5 months old, which is pretty darn exciting. But I have to tell you, these grandkids are something else. I mean, they are God's do-over. And are you with me on that? How many people have grandbabies? Oh, I know. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, they're not coming over to my house every day, okay? I'm not that kind of grandmother. I'm about 2-hour limit, you know what I mean? And then maybe you can spend the night, but I kind of like when you bring them over at about 8 at night. And then I kind of get them by 10 in the morning, you know. And my oldest, you know, and Charlie snapped at my youngest grandson a couple of days ago. I looked at him and I go, we do not do that. There is no telling him no. We can talk to him about it. I am not going to be that parent. And my oldest grandson is started going to a Christian school, and it's really unusual that they're doing this because they don't do church or anything like that. And so now they're starting to go to a Christian school, and they flew in, and I had Ryder in the car. And my son is not doing any sort of spirituality at all. And you know, oh, well, so what? And, you know, he's still in my prayers. So Ryder's in the car, and Max and Holly are, at that point, that Max is talking about Jesus and Jesus and Jesus, and Ryder goes, "Who is Jesus?" And Max turns around and goes, "He is our Savior." And I just drive like a, whew, we're going to tone that Savior thing down just a little bit. Now, Max is going to this Christian school, and Holly has not started going. Now, Holly is just like me, and my kids. My daughter is so type A personality. I mean, she does not color outside the line. She shows up 15 minutes early. The rules are the rules. You know, I mean, that is how she does it. My son, on the other hand, could care less. You know what I mean? But my daughter is that firstborn type A. She just does it. And so she takes Max to this Christian school, and Holly hadn't started going yet. She's going now. But so it's Christmas, and Max says, "I'd like to say the prayer at dinner." And so he says this really, you know, obviously he's the Lord and Savior, so I can imagine how the prayer went. And so Holly's like, you know, she's just like me. My daughter's scared to death. She's like, "Well, Mother, of all the relatives, we're a little panicked that she's like you." And so Holly goes, after Max finishes, Holly goes, "I'd like to say a prayer." Well, she knows nothing about Jesus. She knows nothing about prayer. April goes, "Okay." She goes, "Dear Santa." Oh, God. I got to keep moving. I got one more grandkid story. I just love him. My grandson is the youngest one. He's pretty darn smart. And he goes, "You know, Graham, there are 50 states." And I go, "Oh, I think there's 52. And I know nothing. You have to know that. I know nothing. But I'm very confident in my nothingness, okay? And he goes, "No, Graham, I know." And he's fine. "I know there's 50 states." And I go, "Well, ask the Google." And so he asks the Google. And the Google, you know, goes, "There are 50 states. And, you know, Alaska was added or whatever." And I looked at him and I said, "You know, there's 52 cards in a deck." Sorry, I got that a little mixed up. State card. My husband likes to say I'm a little bit like taking a drink from a fire hose, and that is accurate. That's all I'm going to say about that. I like to say, you know, I'm the vessel in here. You know, I'm not the power. You know, and I love it, Kelly. Your introduction to me was so heartfelt, and I love that. I am not the power. I'm not going to be the sponsor who tells you what car to get, what boy to date, you know, what job to take. I am the vessel to help you get connected to the power that will tell you. Because trust me, you do not want me managing your life. Oh, I want to so bad. But you don't want that, right? That's just not me. And I like to do my qualifications. Oh, my God, you and I could have drank, Pat, together. I mean, oh, my God. I mean, I started drinking at 12, and the party began, and very freely. I was very, very nice to a lot of people from that age on. And I liked the creepy guy. I went to the older man because he could buy booze. He had a car. We hitchhiked. I mean, we're base. You know, I left home at 15. I get it. And so I like to say, when I start, I can't stop, and I can't stop starting. That's what qualifies me, because I want to talk about the third step. I don't want to really get into a whole lot of my drinking. I rarely ever do an AA. I like to talk about staying sober. I think we all get that, you know, we got to understand that we're alcoholic. That's real, real important, that allergy and that mental obsession. But once we're past that, man, we got to get to the meat of this thing. See, lack of power is my dilemma. I have got to get connected to a power, and the only way to get connected to a power is to get unblocked. And trust me, you don't get unblocked and stay unblocked. You get unblocked and keep unblocked. That means you got to stay deep in inventory process, and that's going to be talked about the rest of the time. I like to say I'm one of the lucky ones, man. Once again, we had a lot in common, Pat. I chased a boy into AA. He had 6 years, and I had 10 minutes. And you know, it works either way. And I swear, you know, to me, when I saw Joe, I thought, oh, my God. And I mean, we women, we're like a vortex. that's how we operate, and you all operate that way. You know what I mean? However, I'm not saying what I said last year, Polly, because, you know, oh, look, Lee, is this perfect timing? Mm-hmm. He's bringing me coffee. Thank you. Nothing like having Clark Kent bring you coffee. So, and I love, and thank God nobody was the arbiter of my sex life. Joe was 6 years sober. Matter of fact, he'd come out of the Pacific group. He was a Texas boy. He'd gone out there to be in Santa Monica, and he'd been a strong member of the Pacific group. He knew Chuck. He, as a matter of fact, he visited with Chuck, and that's when he decided to come back to Texas. He'd lost his sister in a car accident, and he knew his mom needed him, and he came back to Texas, and then I meet him within 2 weeks of him being there. I mean, God is so awesome. He really is, guys. He divinely inspires every moment of your life. But we're asleep most of the time. We don't even see it because we know what we want. You know what I mean? And we go through life with these blinders. And the steps are about dropping those blinders. And that's what's so difficult. And when I met Joe, he said something magical was happening. I give it a joke about the vortex and all that stuff. But I got to tell you something. I knew something magical was happening. I got sober on the same day he was sober. That's big. That's big. So in my mind, I thought, hey, if I stay sober a year, he'll call me. I mean, how sick is that? But you know what? Hey, that kept me healthy, kept getting sober. You know, now it wasn't going to keep me sober. But I mean, if Child Protective Services coming, like, oh, that would have gotten my attention. It wouldn't keep me sober, but it'd get my attention. So I'd sit at his feet while he'd read the big book. I love this guy. I fell in love with the laughter of AA. See, I was one of the lucky ones. I had no idea that I was one of the lucky ones. I thought everybody was. I thought everybody that walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous fell in love with it. Not so. Watch this. I want people to raise their hand if on day one, when you walked into AA, you fell in love with it. Look around the room. It is a smattering of hands. And here's the reason I make that point, is because when we try to help somebody get sober, and they don't love AA, we can't figure out what to do with them. And that's when we better have a message of depth and weight. Because there are people that can't stay sober for 2 days. See, I loved you guys so much, I couldn't wait. So one of the things I tell people is when you go to an AA meeting, even at this conference, look around and see the people that are not laughing. There's plenty of them. You know, we are all just laughing, laughing, laughing. There's somebody sitting there. They don't think a darn thing is funny. How many of you guys, did any of y'all come here, if you did, raise your hand, if you came here all by yourself and you don't know anyone? Raise your hand. Hi, hi, hi. Come on, all the way up there. Yeah. Now, I'm going to take that a step further. I want you guys to stand up so everybody can see you. You guys stand up. I saw a couple of... over here. Okay. Now, Marty and I have a big old suite. It's room 1602. And we're having a party tomorrow. All day. Now, you can't miss a speaker, but I want you guys to come. And I want you to feel welcome anywhere in AA. But you have to go there. You have to do it. You have to be a part of. It's just crucial. Well, I also want to say, before I get ready to get started, the big book of Alcoholics, and I know, I'm not even starting. Hey, Pat left 10 minutes on the table. I'm taking it, okay? I already told Lee. I said, she left 10 minutes on the table. Lee, it's mine. It's all mine. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous was named by the Library of Congress as one of the 88 books that shaped America. And you know what's something? I didn't touch my book for 12 years. I said, great book that shaped America, works as a great coffee coaster. You know what I mean? And I mean, think about it. When was the last time you really got your big book out and you worked it and you studied it and you read it? It's unbelievable. We will put the most important book that will treat our illness on a shelf and not touch it. Now, we'll read several other books. Oh, yeah, well, you know, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the 12 and 12, but I mean, the big book is our textbook. Just saying. And, you know, the 12 and 12 is a good book, but it tends to stand in the way of the directions of the great. That's just what I'm saying. And so we got to get that. There's something that I love. There's a woman I love, and her name is Florence Scofield Shen. She was Emmett's predecessor, or if that's the right word, I don't know. Marty, correct me. And she writes, there's a book she wrote that's called The Game of Life. And it says something in there that's so powerful. It says, most people consider life a battle. But it's not a battle, it's a game. It's a game, however, which cannot be played successfully without the knowledge of spiritual law. Right? Spiritual principles, spiritual laws are all in our 12 steps. It's a cause and effect life. See, cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. We think life is coming at us. It's coming from us. My exterior out here, my effect, is a demonstration of my inward condition. So if I'm afraid, oh, watch me. I'm going to be acting nervous and doing whatever, and then I'm upsetting all these people, and I can't figure out why. If I'm angry, people don't want to be around me. I can't figure out why. See, it's all coming from me, not coming at me. And then the spiritual laws are self-fulfilling prophecy, water seeks its own level, so within as without, as a man thinketh. I mean, they're all there, and we overlook them, and we can't figure it out. And that's what the beauty of all of this process is. It's all about an inventory process, not a self-inventory. You know, a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. It's why another human being needs to look at your inventory with you. It's crucial. And of course you're taking this to God. One of the things I misunderstood in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's no one's fault but my own, we hear what we want to hear. We really do. And God knows what we hear. Oh, my God. And if you hear it in AA long enough, you think it's AA, and you don't verify it in the book, and then the next thing you know, you're saying it, right? And so one of the things is, I thought AA was all about not drinking. I really did. And don't get me wrong. We need you to not drink. That is important, okay? And we need you to not drink. But I thought not drinking was the finish line. So I'm going through AA thinking that not drinking is the deal, and I got it from here, right? I worked a program based on the abstinence of alcohol. And Pat did a beautiful job of explaining that that's not it. Oh, I can still have an affair, I can cheat, I can lie, and I can steal sober. At many years sober. I still want to steal. I do. I see something laying there and I think, oh my God, my grandson and I are at Chuck E. Cheese, right? You know, where the tickets spit out. I look over, the machine next to me's got a whole line of tickets spit out. And I'm, I'm sure they have video cameras all in that place because it's children. They're like, hey, check it out. Check out this chick. Watch her. Oh, my God. So I always like to say, too, physical sobriety looks like recovery, right? Oh, and by the way, those tickets were like last Thursday, okay? So, you know, people go, well, I don't steal. Yes, you do. Have you taken a pen from work? You know, I mean, how big does it have to be until you call it stealing? You know, people say, I don't lie. I go, well, you just lied by saying that. Okay, you know. The physical sobriety has a tendency to look like recovery. Then I thought, okay, so I think AA is for not drinking. I think counseling, because I get sober in the 80s, right? Remember what the 80s were? Inner child. You couldn't miss it. It was all inner child. You could not miss it. Adult children of alcoholics came out of it. Everybody's going to Al-Anon. I mean, we are, and I'm not saying don't go to Al-Anon. Oh, my God, if you hear me say that, I'll slap you personally. But I'm just saying, it was all about managing my emotions and who upset me so badly. And you had to nurture that inner child. You know, what color's your parachute? You know, bringing a stuffed animal to, you know, your meetings. And so that's what we did. So it was all that I learned was about boundaries and all of that stuff. And I'm not saying those are bad, but I did damage a relationship from my dad and I. I damaged it. I ruined it. I was 10 years sober when he died, and I'd never made the accurate amends. I did such a lame amend. And then I caused him tremendous grief. It's heartbreaking. And I love what it says on page 19. It says, the boundaries and detachment really do fly in the face of what it says on page 19. Now, that doesn't mean you got to make them your best friend and go have coffee with them every day. But it says most of us sense the real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints are basically my guiding light. As an ex-problem drinker, my very life depends upon the constant thought of others and how I may help meet their needs. So that means, let me give it to you in layman's terms. The person that pisses you off the most is going to be the one that helps you. Because you're going to do the inventory and get down to the old ideas of why does that personality bother me so badly? You're going to sponsor them too. And then I thought, here's my third thing. I thought the church, because I had no problem with the God thing. Church was whatever. No, I thought church was my spiritual growth. And I'm not saying you don't go to church. But that's what I thought. AA's for not drinking, counseling for your living problems, and church was for my spiritual problems. And I love this complete misunderstanding that I had, because that feeds beautifully into what I understand the book says. One of the things I can tell you is I was driven as a child. I really was. I mean, I came out of the womb kind of going, what, me? You know, I'm third born. You know, my mom dies unexpectedly. You know, my dad remarries three times in 18 months. I mean, come on. You know, ain't quite the player. And, you know, Charlie likes to say, boy, he could close a deal. And, you know, it's 1966, and I used to think that that's what made me alcoholic. I get today that that's not what made me alcoholic. I thought something had to make me alcoholic. I got the genetic bullet. I get that. But what I didn't understand is why am I so driven behind a lot of these old ideas about women? And thank God for the inventory process, because it's in the third column of a four-column inventory, right? That third column is what we're going to get into. We're going to start dig deeper and deeper into these old ideas that I have, right? So they influenced, having all those women come through my life and everything like that, influenced my old ideas. But that's not what it was about. I can also tell you that when Joe and I, it was so interesting because when Joe and I got to get to the rest of this third step. When Joe and I know, I got three things I just have to pass by. Okay, I'm done. I'm going past him. Okay, so when Joe and I got together, he was also very much of a Christian, and that's what I chose. I chose Christianity, and you get to choose whatever you want. That's what I chose, and I certainly don't speak of it in meetings, but at the podium I can tell you my story. And so Joe and I chose Christianity, and Joe's like, "Kay, you know, why don't you come to this church? You know, it's non-denominational." And I'm like, not really. And he goes, come on. And I thought, okay, fine, I'll check it out. And I come walking in there, and I don't know if you guys have ever been to a non-denominational church that's got worship, but let me tell you, if they had the big screens, like, check that out. Well, so I come walking in, and my God, they are singing, and I'm like, oh, my God. The next thing you know, I am just praising Jesus. And then, you know, little do I know, for the next 3 years, I loved AA. I loved AA, still loved AA, love you people. But I was kind of ready to go to church, so I'm going to be back and come back and save you heathens. You know what I mean? You know that person? Come on, look around the room. You know that Jesus freak that comes back to save you heathen alcoholic. And, oh my God, I mean, people were just boom, 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 you know. And so, I mean, Joe and I looked Amish. I am not kidding you. I started wearing underwear, right? Just saying. And one of the things I can tell you that I didn't understand. We were doing the church thing for 3 years, and let me tell you, I was stark raving sober. I was absolutely out of my mind. I wasn't working the 12 steps. I had no idea that that was not going to do it, that wasn't what the book is talking to me about. The book is talking about being unblocked so that this sunlight of the Spirit can shine through me. See, you can go kneel, you can pray, you can sit at the ashram, you can do the feathers of the you know, Native Americans, you can do it all. Great. It won't treat your alcoholism. Just saying. Okay, so now. now I'm getting to the third step.
Okay, not too bad, not too bad.
Dr. Bob said that there are clear-cut directions, but everybody has a different experience. So please don't misunderstand what that just said. Everyone's going to have a different experience with the steps, but they are clear-cut. We are not really designed to change them. Some people go, well, I'm going to take you through the work slowly. It doesn't say that in the book. Action, action, more action, 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 action. I'm telling you, it says, you got to do it quickly. You know, now, when it comes to the amends process, some people don't have to do that quickly because it gives you a break. Because some of these we don't want to make. We just pray for the willingness. So, there you go. How do you like that one, huh? So, don't think that this is a slow process. This is triage, man. This person is bleeding to death. We are the oxygen. We got to give them the air they need. And so the third step says, I'm almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motive's good.
Oh,
wait till we get to that one. And then in 24 pages, right, it's amazing what the book has. It's like the simplest amount of pages. See, it's 24 pages right here. And in the 10th step, it says, we've ceased fighting anyone or anything. We will run from these pages. We will hide out in meetings from these pages. We will go become the GSR, the GMO, the PMT. I'll be doing the PIPPCTPQP. But we won't do that work. Oh, and trust me, I'm a perfect example of it. I get it. So the third step is more than a prayer. We tend to rush people into that prayer. And here's what I got to tell you. The third step, it's getting ready to break the whole third step down. I call it the second surrender, right? The second surrender is our third step. The first surrender is to alcohol. And that's a big one. Don't get me wrong. I was one of the lucky ones. I was obsession to drink was removed at 90 days. I was very, very fortunate. It's easier to get an alcoholic to stop drinking than it is to get him to quit playing God. Let that one just absorb. And alcohol was the only thing that treated the pain of living a life based on self-will. See, alcohol treats alcoholism. So alcohol's not the problem, it's the solution. So you take away my solution, well, you better give me a 12-step program or I'm in deep, deep trouble. That's why we are restless, irritable, and discontent when you take away the booze. See, it doesn't get better. My problems heat up. Well, now let's talk about what these problems are. Okay? Selfishness and self-centeredness, what Kelly read. That we think, we is the first 100 who wrote the book. We don't become a part of we until we get into this work. Right? You're not 3 days sober and a part of the we yet. Okay? Just saying. That we think is the root of our troubles. The root of our troubles. What? I mean, I was voted most likable in high school 4 years in a row. Clearly, I am not selfish and self-centered. I mean, I remember having that thought in a meeting. And I thought, but Charlie was my best friend. Oh, he was so clearly selfish and self-centered. I watched, who is now my husband today. But let me tell you, watching Charlie was so, it was so obvious. He's just so self-centered. I am so glad I don't have that. You know, I thought it was conceited and stingy. And I'm just not that. I just really like myself. And then it says, I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seeming without provocation, but we invariably, which means always, find that at some time in the past I made a decision based on me that later placed me in a position to be hurt. See, I don't know I've done that until I step on your toes and you retaliate. And then all of a sudden I call my sponsor. What the heck? Well, what happened? I tell her the story. She walks the dog backwards, and the next thing you know, I go, oh my God. Yeah. I do vaguely remember having that. But when you're asleep, you don't see it. Have you ever gotten up and you woke up and you had a dream, and then all of a sudden you go, oh my God. And somebody in 5 minutes goes, what'd you dream? And you're like, I can't really remember. It was really big. If you'd asked me right when I woke up, I'd have known, but I... That's what we do in life. We go through life asleep, dreaming we're awake. And so let me give you an example of what that selfishness and self-centered look like. Somebody walks into an AA meeting, and you're sitting there, and they look over at you and you go, what the hell was that about? Then I'm watching them. Then they sit down. Then they lean over and talk to the person next to them. Oh, yeah. Right. And I mean, so I go into this delusion, right? I'm driven by that fear. I don't realize that I'm driven. See, driven, I'm not choosing to act this way. So when you're driven, you're texting somebody 19 times in a row, right? If somebody comes up to you and you say, I'm not going to say this, I'm not going to say this. They ask you a question, you go, right? That's driven. I'm not choosing to act this way. I'm not going to sleep with them. I'm not going to sleep with them. I'm sleeping with them. I'm sleeping with them. I'm sleeping with them. Driven. That's the way that deal shows up. And then we've got the delusion that goes with it, and the self-seeking and the self-pity. Oh, my God. Nobody likes to see self-pity. My sponsor and I like to call it self-pathetic. But self-righteous and self-delusion are so convoluted. Because I'm like, what an idiot. I'm surrounded by idiots. Right there. Self-righteous, self-pity. I mean, it's like, poop-poop. So, it's in my DNA. See, I don't think too much of myself or too little of myself. All I think about is me. See, and we love to say that in AA, oh, it's all about me, it's all about me. I'm like, oh, honey, you've got no idea how deep that thread runs. I mean, it is a corroding thread. The fabric of my existence is shot through with it for the rest of my life. Just saying. Okay. So page 60 says we are at step 3 in italics. Now that's just something to consider. Because on page 63 it says we are now at step 3 that's not in italics. Now my opinion on that, I don't have Bill or Bob to ask, but my opinion is that there it's in italics because it's getting ready to explain to me the different ways that self manifests for us as a whole. And then when it gets to the we are now at, it's the affirmation of the decision we've just made. Step 3 is way more than just a decision. You better darn sure know what you're deciding before you get on your knees and start talking about that. So somebody's got to break this down. And I love where it says, which is that we decide to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. Well, to me, the first time I heard that thought, I remember I said to myself out loud, would I have to ask God to help me brush my teeth? Because I'm stubborn. I am stubborn. I'm immature. I'm hard-headed. I'm opinionated. Those are my better qualities. So, it says, so our will is our thoughts and our lives is our actions. So it's a cause and effect. It's my thoughts and my actions. Let me tell you, one of the things that the book is trying to get me to in the 10th step and all of those other, you know, different types of inventory, the 10th step, that spot check inventory, right? We're going to hear all about that. Watching for resentment, dishonesty, selfishness, and fear. And when these crop up, ask God at once to remove it. Talk to somebody immediately. You know, make amends quickly if we've stepped on the toes of anyone. Resolutely turn our thoughts to others, right? That spot check inventory. Then we check our work in the evening review, the 11th step. We're asking ourselves, did we do pretty good today? How was it? And then in the morning, we take those corrective measures into upon awakening, asking to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking. Okay, you're like, well, I didn't do that. And it's like, so see, we have to get you out of a thought-react-centered life. So instead, we see something and we react. So this, we react to, right? No, I'm going to go find out about it. So we're trying to get to this God consciousness to where I'm observing myself. Now, wait till you hear this one. Without judgment. Do not judge yourself. Trust me. Don't call your sponsor. I have to tell on myself. Oh, my God. I call Marty. I go, oh, Marty. God Almighty, I am so pissed off at somebody. I can't wait for you to set me free. Tell me. I can't even breathe. I'm so mad. You know what I mean? I can't wait to call Marty. That's That's the way we're trying to get you to, right? So, and I love, remember that it's a demonstration of my inward condition, right? Keep that in mind. Then the book says, just what do we mean by that and just what do we do? Fair questions to ask. What do you mean turn my life and my will over to the care of God? It spends the next two pages explaining what do we mean and then the other half a page in what do we do? Huh, really? Guess I haven't really looked at it that closely yet. Page 61 says the first requirement. So there's a requirement. Is that I have to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I'm not. Watch my actions. We're women. I'm gonna say a cuss word or two. If that bothers you, you're going to have to put my name in column one and what I said in column two. Because I'm telling you I'm going to do it, okay? So, I'm a kind of gal who gets shit done. You know what I mean? I don't really think about who I stepped on their toes. Get out of my way, get out of my way, get out of my way. In the grocery store, what is that cart doing there? You know what I mean? But when I put my cart there, I want to explain to you I wasn't paying attention. I'm really sorry. You know what I mean? So I'm not really convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. See, self-reliance was the only tool I had when I came into AA. And it worked for me. I don't know about you guys, but let me tell you, I got some power that still scares me today. I'm telling you, I could do a lot in this world. I am a powerful woman. I could give you a list of 10 things that you'd go, shut up. Yeah. I did that. Yeah. I know. I still can't even believe I did it. And so you tell me to lay that tool down for some sort of spiritual hokey pokey? You got to be kidding me. You know, I mean, I'll bring God in when I need him, but I just don't need him, you know. So that's my experience. So, and I love what it's talking about. So it says, we were almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. So this is starting to take me into kind motives. See, that's where we know when we stepped on your toes and we told somebody something you told me not to tell them. And I get all that. Now, this is a whole different ball game, guys. This is where behind kind motives. So you come into AA and we teach you integrity, dignity, character, respect. I got to rat you guys out that ran in front of the podium here. The whole lot of you ran in front of the podium and said, who is their sponsor? That is against AA rules right there. Now, we silently judged you. I'll give it to you. Now, you'll be watching for me to do something wrong. Fine. But, so we teach you all these things, right? Do these things. Show up when you're supposed to show up. Don't go get a cup of coffee. We teach you integrity, dignity, honor, respect, all these things that are important. However, at about 18 months, the shine of being sober starts to wear off. You start looking around going, I'm the only one standing at the door greeting. You know what I mean? I'm the only one setting up the chairs and the tables. Nobody else appreciates what I do. And then before you know it, man, it starts to turn on you. Turns into a defect. How about this one? I love you guys that are always on time. Not only are you on time, you're 10 minutes early. And then you sit there and quietly judge everyone who comes in. You're taking a good character and got a defect out of it. See, I think I'm a good parent. I'm really a better parent than you are, right? I think I'm a good AA. I'm really a better AA than you are. See, I take a good quality, this good character, and I turn it upside down. So that's why I think the seven-step prayer is not about, it says, take the good and the bad of me, because I can't figure out what's good and what's bad. I'm so mixed up. That's what I think, but, you know, somebody else may have a different opinion. So, it's good intentions. I didn't mean to hurt anybody, right? See, I don't know I have a kind motive until you don't react the way I want you to. How about this one? I'll let you in traffic. You better give me one of these. How about, I'll hold the door for you, but you better say thank you. And look me in the eye. Why? Because I'm a giver. You know what I'm saying? I'm just a giver. And I love it says on page 64, it says, being convinced that self manifested in various ways is what causes our failure. We have to get down to the causes and conditions. So it's telling me on page 61 I have to be convinced, and then it's telling me I'm being convinced. So in between 60 to 64, it's trying to convince me the different ways self shows up. Now, guys, understand this. See, it's easy for people to see me as an extreme example. I'm outspoken, I'm opinionated, I'm assertive, I'm loud, I'm these kind of things. You go, well, that is an extreme example. But if you are the type of personality who would not say peep if you had a mouthful, you fly into a room stealth, right? You know, like one of those drones. Right? That's the way self shows up for you. It doesn't make you any less alcoholic than I am. But we have to see the different ways that self shows up. So it says we're the actor running the whole show. I am forever. Does that tell you right there you're going to be doing this forever? Trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. See, I'm the sheriff of the world. Now, I know you think you are. When you're around me, you are merely the deputy, okay? I'm the sheriff. I'm the sheriff in the grocery store. I mean, I'm telling you what, if your kid is standing up in the car, I'm like, hey, set it down, set it down. I don't care. I look at the parent and go, hey, takes a village to raise him. And, oh, I'm terrible. I am terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Ask my son at the water park, you know, if somebody step out of line, hey. Over there, you, move it. And I am the AA police, I am the cleavage police, and there are violations all throughout the room. Telling you, I swear to God, we were in Australia, I had more Australians coming up to me going, do you have a pen? I go, a pin? Girl, I see underboob. I mean, if you're seeing underboob, we got a serious problem. I mean, cleavage is bad, but the bosom has got to be covered. You know? I can't even have a conversation with a woman who's showing too much boob. You know what I mean? I'm like... So now, we got to keep moving on. So you're going to have to hold those laughters down a little bit. So, the delusion is, if my arrangements would only stay put, right? If only everyone would do as I wish, the show would be great. Everyone, including me, would be happy. Katie-topia. I mean, how hard can that be? And here's the craziness. You see, I take this kind motive, and then I have this delusion, if everyone would do as I wish, and I take my actions through that funnel, and the worst I'm going to get is an A-. So, see, that's how we run the show. Unfortunately, I think we get confused and go to other programs trying to learn how to manage our emotions or manage our relationships. I'm not saying anybody shouldn't do that. I'm just saying, this is straight out of my book. It is the root of my problem. I am. So when I do something, somebody goes, oh, you should go to another program. I'm like, shut up. That is right up in my book. That is all about what I'm doing, right? That's what I do. See, the toolkit of self-will is really fabulous. It says, in trying to make all these arrangements, I may be kind, considerate, patient, generous. Just a giver, remember, just a giver. That if I don't get my way, I am mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. Oh, I'm going to get in the way. I'm just saying. And so now, this is where I live with my sponsees. I live in this paragraph. They call me. Now, this is my relationship with my sponsees. May not be yours, so please don't hear me say that. This is how I sponsor. Matter of fact, if I get too close to you, you know, I'm probably not going to be in your baby shower. I'm probably not going to be in your wedding. I'm not going to be in your wedding. But you know what I mean? I am not going to do these things because if we get too close, I lose my perspective. And all of a sudden, I don't like the boy you're dating, and I don't like the clothes you're wearing. You know what I mean? So for me, I can't do that. So my job is, I'm like the suicide hotline. You know what I mean? I am. You're going to call me when the show doesn't come off. I'm the 10-step Gail. That's what I like to do. We're going to be doing 10 steps. We're going to be talking about this stuff. So it says, what usually happens, this is when you're calling me. The show doesn't come off very well. She begins to think life doesn't treat her right. There's the self-pity. How many of you guys last week didn't think life treated you right? Oh, come on. God Almighty, and you don't mind. Okay. He decides to exert himself more. There's where I'm driven by that fear. He becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious. There's the toolkit of self-will. Bobbing and weaving. As the case may be, still the play doesn't suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure that others are more to blame. And that's where that line, if I could change only one line in AA, I'm telling you, if they gave me one line to change in meetings, it would be my part. It does not say my part. And I'm telling you, it's easy to trip up on it. You hear it in AA enough. It's my wrongs, my mistakes, my harms. It is, I take 110% responsibility for whoever I have upset or they've upset me. I mean, I've got to do that or I will not be free. And I'm telling you, I'd much rather ask for forgiveness than to have to be, forgive. Did you get that? I'd rather ask for forgiveness. I don't forgive. I keep score. I get even. I like when you hurt and fall down. You know what I mean? I mean, I do. I'm not lying to you. It's one of my biggest character defects that God and I have been working on. It says, I become angry, indignant, and self-pity. Now, angry, column 2. Indignant, column 3. Self-pity, column 4. There's where the inventory. It's all over the third step. All over it. And people, here's something that really gets me in AA that we gotta watch out for. People go, well, I know these are high-end problems. Well, they better be. If you've been sober a while, the gifts of sobriety become a problem. That's okay. We don't want you to still have the same problems that you still don't have a car and you're 12 years sober. That might be more than just alcoholism, I'm just saying. But what we're looking for is high-end problems. You just don't go into a meeting and raise your hand and go, look, the pool boy put too much chlorine in my pool. You know, come on. You can call me and go, that goddamn pool boy is pissing me off. That isn't a legitimate 10th step. You know, so I'm just saying. So what, God, Marty, I've been around you. Marty loves that I'm just saying thing. I spend 2 days with her and now I'm just saying. Boy, we take on other people's personalities like that, don't we? I'm just saying. It says, what's my basic trouble? Is he really not a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Oh, now this is my favorite. We like to use more current terms, you know. And we use terms like, well, I'm just a people pleaser. I'm just a people pleaser. I go, well, okay, let's do this. Let's bring all the people you pleased in this side of the room. What you are is an approval sucker is what you are, okay? Let's just call it what it is. And then it says, is she not a victim of the delusion that she can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if she only manages well? Now, you know, I know I love people, and I'm not ripping on you too bad, okay? But I am ripping on you a little. People always get these AA tattoos, you know, once they get sober, they, you know, courage, live and let live. And I'm like, oh, you might regret that. But if you're going to get a tattoo, get this one. Is he not a victim of his own delusion that he can rest satisfaction and happiness out of the world and just manage it? You need to be reminded of that one a lot. And I love to break that one down because it says here, is he not a victim? That means I'm tricked or duped, right? I'm tricked or duped by my own delusion. Now wait till you hear the 1935, we use a 1935 dictionary at PPG. Wait till you hear the definition of delusion. We're not denial. Please get that word out of your vocabulary. Alcoholics are not in denial. We're in delusion. And when you hear it, it should scare you. Okay? It's an impression that is firmly maintained despite being contradicted by what is accepted as reality.
And then it goes on. It's even better. Typically a symptom of a mental disorder. So this three lines takes on a lot more energy. So then it says, he can rest, which means to seize by force, satisfaction and happiness, being right and happy, if he just manages well. See, if I can just manage you, I'll be okay. But look what it's doing. And that's why if you say, if I come to you with a problem and you go, well, would you rather be right or happy? Well, first of all, I want to slap the crap out of you. And I can give you the right answer. But I want both. See, I always want to be right. Always. But I'm good at faking it. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'll kill both of us. You know what I mean? If it starts to get really ugly, I personally am a homicidal kind of gal. I'm not a suicidal kind of gal. I can take you out and I'm fine. And but if it really gets dicey, we're both going. You know, we're both going. And I love what it says in the book. It says, the victor only seems to win at war, although his moments of triumph are short-lived. This need to be right is huge, guys. Huge. And it drives us to prove we're right. Prove we're right. And the word seems is italicized. You know why? Because it's a delusion. You think that's going to give you happiness if your parents say, I wish I'd have done that different. It ain't. It ain't. Mm-mm. Let me tell you. It's not. We are so delusional in that area. And this is the other one that gets me. The world and its people really do dominate us. Just the world. Oh, and its people. Have a good day. The world and its people. So we're talking the weather. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys put your luggage on that luggage cart. Was that thing operating correctly? I mean, oh, for God's sakes, what am I doing here? You know, I mean, we are so irritable. It's like all of a sudden the girl sitting three down from me has a laugh that's making me crazy. Okay, just saying. After a while, I'm going to have to stare at you and give you one of these. So the world and its people really do dominate us. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancy or real. Oh, by the way, just have the power to kill me. That's it. Other than that, go ahead and tell people that alcoholics are just like everybody. That's just human nature. Whatever. Whatever. Let me tell you guys, we are not like normal people. We're outright mental defect, full flight from reality, cannot differentiate the true from the false. You know, now, we blend. We do blend. But I am clearly defective. And I got no problem with that. I actually like it because I love you guys. I mean, you're my people, you're my tribe. I love you. And so then it says, isn't it evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and don't his actions make each of them want to snatch and retaliate everything they can out of the show? See, we once again think life's coming at us. Oh, we have stirred this whole thing up. And it says, is he not in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? See, that line, when you tell me your storyline, wait till I draw it into that one. You go, ooh. What? And you just got to walk the dog backwards. And my job is to ask a whole ton of questions, because what you're saying isn't even what happened. It is. I'll give you an example. Oh, my God, the way self-will shows up for me sometimes shocks me. My son-in-law has this esophageal thing that every once in a while, if he drinks a certain type of a beverage, the food gets stuck here. It's like an allergic reaction. Now, he's not going to, you know, suffocate and die right there, but it's pretty scary. So I've got not one of his kids, so I have another grandchild with me, and Charlie and I are all sitting at a restaurant, and all of a sudden, Devin just stands up, and he's like, you know, and I'm like, oh, my God, Devin, are you okay? He goes, give me a minute. And Charlie goes, oh, I think it's happened. It happened about every 6 months. I'm like, oh, my God. And so, you know, I'm like, and so I think, you know what, I'm just going to take Ryder. And there's a claw machine. And I love the claw machine. And I'm damn good at the claw machine. Not everybody is, but I am. Okay? My son's better than me, but I'm good at it. And I mean, I get to the side and so I get Ryder over there and we're working the claw machine, right? You know? And I know that we're deciding to take him to the hospital. But I'm working. So all of a sudden the claw picks up a stuffed animal. It's here, right there. And it's getting ready to bring it over to drop it. I look over and Devin's walking this way, right? Thinking, oh boy. And all of a sudden it drops right before the bucket, right? And Devin goes, Katie, we need to go. And I go, can you just give me one more minute? Oh, my God. And this is what my son-in-law did. He goes. I couldn't even believe I said it. I really couldn't. I could not believe that that toy was more important than him. Not being able to, oh, breathe. And I said, Ryder, we got to go. And I mean, we shoot out there. Of course, I'm not going to put another dollar in. You know what I mean? I might do that if I was under a year sober, but I am too long sober. I shoot out there. And I said, I got in the car and I said, Devin, I am so sorry I said that. That was so thoughtless and inconsiderate. Cleaned it up right away. I saw it. Right? Now, here's what's interesting. He didn't go to the hospital, but I did go back to that place the next day. I did, and I didn't get the goddamn toy. And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I couldn't believe I was there. I was like, and then, guys, this was like 3 months ago, okay? So don't go thinking you got some spiritual giant up here. Now, here's another one, and this one was very interesting. I decided to get Invisalign, and if you have Invisalign, please don't talk to me about it. Okay, I just am saying it, okay? It seems like I get 19 people going, So I decided to get Invisalign, and so I go to this orthodontist. I don't know him, you know, and he's got all the, you know, 12-year-olds in the chair getting the wires and everything, and so I'm getting, it's the first time I'm there, and, you know, and he's talking to me. He's really fit. I was a fitness professional for 30 years, and so he and I are talking, and we're talking about fitness, and I get up, and I'm done with my appointment, and all of a sudden, all the women, you know, in the office start coming in, and they're listening because I'm so fascinating. And I'm talking fitness. I'm talking something I know, right? And he's really fit. He's about 45 years old. He's a cyclist, you know, and I'm just going on and on. I'm seeing all these women. I'm thinking, oh, my, I'm just changing lives. Just changing. And so I decide to go out to my, I'm getting ready to leave, and I'm going to go out to my car. Well, if you have Invisalign, you got to brush your teeth about every 20 seconds, you know, and because you can't eat anything. So I go out to my car, and I realize I have my lunch there. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to take my lunch back in there and eat in there because I can brush my teeth. I mean, they're all set up for tooth, you know, brushing your teeth. And so I go back, and it's not 4 minutes. I go back to their door, and the building is closed, locked, lights out. And I went, oh, they didn't think I was fascinating. They were going, could she shut up and get out of here? Because we're done. We're done. We're ready to leave. I mean, you guys, I walked out of there, down one flight of stairs, to my car, thought, hey, I'll get my food. Turned around, walked back, they're gone. They're out of the office. See, we don't have a clue the effect we have on people sometimes. So when I called to make my next appointment, they, you know, that was their first introduction to me. And I told the girl, I said, Amy, let me tell you something. I said, I thought y'all were fascinated by me. And what I realized is you were wanting to get out of your office. So I am heightenedly aware that that was insensitive and I won't do that again. You know, and she laughed and laughed. But that's what I'm talking about, guys. We don't see that. Another way that self shows up that's very dangerous is self-talk. Come on, Katie, you can do this. You know this has always been a problem. You can handle this. Didn't bring God into it at all. See? And so it says, so our troubles, we think, are of our own making. See, if I want to be free, the problem's got to be me. They are of my own making. And except the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, comma, though he usually doesn't think so. Uh-huh. I know you're out there going, I don't think I am. Though he usually doesn't think so. And it says many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore. That's how we can jump in the hay with somebody sober. We step outside of our spiritual growth and not do these disciplines. Oh, I can rob a bank. I really could. You know what I mean? You make me crazy enough, I've been there. I've done that. I mean, I have been absolutely crazy. When my husband got sick, and all of a sudden, the next thing I know, he's got a brain tumor. I'm driving a school bus. Me driving a school bus. And not only am I driving a school bus, 3 years I'm driving a school bus. He's had a brain tumor. It's terrible. He ends up going back out after all of that and dies of a heroin overdose. He's 23 years sober and dies of a heroin overdose. I know that heartache of losing the love of your life, man. I get that. It was dark, dark, dark. For if an alcoholic fails to enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he cannot handle certain trials and low spots ahead. Trust me, guys. All I'm saying is, whatever I'm saying, lay your experience up against it. If you're not writing inventory, if you're not doing that, if you're not doing a 10-step evening review, prayer and meditation, looking at your 24 hours, let me tell you, it's Russian roulette. There is no defense against that first drink. You think you got it. You don't. I'm still going. So, I'm watching the clock, though. Lee knows me. Moral and philosophical convictions galore. I can't live up to them. Let me tell you what. I don't believe in slapping your children, but I do believe in spanking the crap out of them. Okay? So, I got no problem with that. I'm not going to spank my grandkids, but my own children, I'll hold them by the arm. Right at Disney World. You know what I mean? I don't care. And you can look at me with the stink eye. I'm like, whoa. You know, that we're raising some self-centered little chitlins out there, people. But I got no opinion on that. But now I don't believe in slapping children. I don't believe in slapping kids in the face. And I slapped both my children in the face. I was never slapped in the face. I couldn't believe when I did it. And when I made that amends to my daughter later on, I made it the one right there. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. Later on in life, I said, should I stay? Well, I still cannot believe I ever slapped you, honey. I want to talk about that. She goes, Mom, that did. That wasn't even in the top 10 things you did. All righty then. And then it says, neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. People say you're working on your character defects. You can't. It's not about that. I mean, yeah, we'd like for you not to say the F word in the Starbucks line. We get that. But we're talking bigger things. You cannot fix self with self, right? It's this self-knowledge is really important. To see what drives me, my values, my old ideas, my belief systems, right? They're going to be in that third column. Otherwise, I go into self-reliance. Well, now that's the end of what do we mean. Right? And now this is what do we do? And I got to read this quick. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Oh, let me tell you, it's not easy, guys. Next, we decided, here's the decision. The prayer is that reiteration that God was going to be our director. He's the principal. We're his agents, right? That means we're empowered to act on his behalf. Oh, I have a buddy I love dearly in AA, been sober forever. He goes, I don't like that. Oh, well, suck it up. You know, just saying that's what the 1935 dictionary says. I'm his agent. See, I get to do these things. I don't get to tell you what to do, but I get to be that vessel. When we sincerely took such a position, what position is that? We're not going to play God, but you're going to try every day. All sorts of remarkable things happen. All sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Now remember, it says on page 48, God does not make too hard a terms for those who seek him. Here's the terms. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we keep close to him and perform his work well. Well, in order to keep close to him, I got to get close to him. In order to get close to him, I got to get unblocked. And remember, you don't get unblocked. You don't get to live off a spiritual experience you had a month ago. You just don't get to. It doesn't work that way. This is a daily process. These disciplines are crucial. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, ask yourself, are you enjoying peace of mind? Can you be alone at perfect peace and ease? No. So I ask you, with a day of technology, oh my God, I hope everybody's phone is off. Turn it on silent. No, don't. Turn it off. Unless you're on the liver transplant list, turn it off. You know what I mean? It's one frickin' hour, you know? And here's the deal. we've got, here's a game you need to get rid of. It's called Candy Crush. It's deadly. You can play it for 15 seconds. You binge watch Netflix. It's deadly, right? We're on Facebook all the time. You're missing the people who are here with you. These are three things that I have to work on daily to not do. I'm saying these is because I did them. Very dangerous. Never did Facebook. And so I want to give you something to think about here. Praying for God's will is easy. Accepting God's will is not. Now, Lee, I know you're getting tight over there, but I got my eye on the time. I just want to give you guys one little piece of indication of what a real 10th step looks like, what this inventory process is, this figuring out how to tie the third step into the inventory process. My husband that passed away was a great sick person. He let me go in and do all the nurse work. I'd get to, you know, I had the pad, and I'd talk to the doctor, and he just never said a word. Doctor asked a question, I answered it. He's a very, very sick man. I did all of it. Charlie, my husband today, doesn't play that way. I don't get to say squat. You with me? Okay? That's not easy. Marty's heard 100 million inventories, so my husband has a throat cancer scare. He's one dysplasia away from being throat cancer. We got to go to the doctor's office every once a month for like the rest of our life. They have to scope his throat just to keep an eye on it down in San Antonio. My husband likes to walk in there, and the nurse says, you know, so Charlie, are you doing nose spray? And he goes, no. You're clearing your throat much? No, not at all. I'm thinking, oh my God, he's such a big fat liar. And so the next thing you know, and I got to get through this quick. The next thing I know is she walks out, and I had had it that day. I was not doing well spiritually at all. I said, you are a big, fat liar. And I swear to God, my husband comes out of that chair, and he's a big guy, and goes, good. And I mean, I grab all my stuff, and I just do that instant cry where you're losing it. You know what I mean? And I went, I am out of here. And I get ready to walk out, and the doctor's coming in. The doctor goes, Katie, he goes, are you okay? So I get out there in the lobby, and I mean, I am too. So I know Marty works in a court of law. For God's sakes, they can't seem to stop court when I call. I've asked her to talk to the judge, and I've done whatever. So I have to text. I'm not a fan of texting. However, I had to text. I say, here's the text. Said, Marty, I need a new toolkit for a sick husband. We're at the doctor's office, and I just left the room. I can't stop crying. I must sit there submissive. There's the old idea. If I don't say anything, he's going to run all over me. I can't do that. He doesn't give them enough information. Marty knows I'm there. She texts me right back. Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. It must be so painful because... Oh, it's coming. There it comes. You ready? I'm sure he's scared, maybe even terrified. None of this is about you. How can you be helpful? Are you in that doctor's office treating him like he knows nothing? That you're the doctor police? Are you coming off when you're giving information to the doctors as smugly superior? Well, let me tell you. Dried up right there. Not one tear. I mean, it was like somebody shut the faucet down. I send her back when I went, yes. She said, now here it comes. Stepping on his toes, are you? Well, if not you, who? All cloaked in a kind motive. You have all the tools, hon. Just use them. I know hospitals and doctors are traumatic stuff for you, and you go on super high alert. This is a new day. And I said, thanks. And here's the best part. Charlie comes walking out, and he says, honey, please come back in there. And had I not done this, I'd have gone. My pride will not let me do that, right? And instead, I gave him a hug, and I said, I'm so sorry. And he said, I understand. It's okay. I mean, see, that's the beauty of a quick inventory right then and there. And so I got to tell you guys, I'm here talking to middle management. I'm the oxygen, man. The newcomer is the blood. But if we step on that oxygen tube and we don't have the guy around that's got time, we're not going to have a message to carry to the new guy. If you're not in the book, please get in the book. And if you are, I'll see you on the fire lines. Thank you.
my God, Katie, thank you.